Can you imagine the level of a mind that watches wrestling?
The audience wants to see action, adventure, wrestling, and plenty of it.
Big men in tights, you know the drill.
Rammer Slammer. Welcome to Rammer Slammer. I'm Ben Flanagan, and we're here to preview Payback, the big pay-per-view coming up on Sunday. Maybe big is not the right term. It's a tweener pay-per-view, obviously the first after WrestleMania 32, and there were mixed reviews for WrestleMania 32. We certainly talked about it. I think more people liked it than they didn't. I think for most people, it was mostly, like, if you want to give it a letter grade, kind of a B effort from WWE, but I've got to say that the card that is listed so far that they've built for Payback is actually on paper a little more impressive, or at least a little more appealing, strictly from an in-ring perspective here. There are a lot of good matches, grudge matches, title matches. You've got AJ Styles in the main event for the WWE Championship. I don't think a lot of hardcore wrestling fans thought that he would arrive that fast after debuting in the WWE at the Royal Rumble back in January, but here he is. But if you're going to have a placeholder, it might as well be somebody as talented as AJ Styles. And there are a handful of others to keep an eye on. And joining me to preview Payback, which airs this Sunday on WWE Network and pay-per-view, is our pal in Huntsville, Ben Stark. And we go down the card and talk about which matches we're looking forward to, what the build-up has been like, and just sort of the state of WWE right now and how they've performed over the past few weeks, especially in the weeks following WrestleMania 32. Quickly, I want to encourage everybody to go check out our last episode in which we interviewed Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated. He's the media critic for SI.com, and his weekly media column, Media Circus, is always a must-read, especially if you're into sports media and sports in general. And we had a great conversation about the mainstream media appeal of WWE, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And also catch Daniel Wagner's very thoughtful words on the passing of Joni Lohrer, as most of us know her, China. And it was nice to see her recognized on this past week's episode of Raw with nice video packages and emphasizing the tweets from many of the current and past superstars from WWE. So that was nice to see. But check out episode 11. I think if you're a big wrestling fan and a media fan, you're really going to enjoy it. And be sure to check us out on iTunes. Please rate and review us if you have a second. Follow us on Twitter at Rammer Slammer, and check us out on Facebook too. We just started a Facebook page, so get in on the Rammer Slammer discussion. And check out AL.com, where I've posted a new piece about some pro wrestlers who have a personal and professional connection with the state of Alabama. After all, this is Rammer Slammer. This is pro wrestling talk in the Deep South. So check it out on AL.com. We will link it in the show notes. So we'll go right now to my conversation with Ben Stark.
This is Ben Flanagan with Rammer Slammer, and I am once again joined by a Rammer Slammer family member, Ben Stark in Huntsville. How's it going, Ben?
Proud to be part of the Rammer Slammer family.
Slammily, as we like to call it.
Slammily.
Yeah, whatever. So, Payback, coming up on Sunday, the first pay-per-view since the earth-shattering success of WrestleMania 32, and Stark, I know you've told me you haven't paid as close attention to the build-up to Payback as you had going into WrestleMania, but on paper, the card for Payback here, the list of matches and the specific wrestlers involved here, men and women going against each other, for me, just, again, strictly on paper, this seems like a more appealing pay-per-view just from an in-ring standpoint. Then WrestleMania 32, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's this weird tradition that WWE has where after WrestleMania, which I think that this year is the best possible template for it, often WrestleMania is the most kind of safe middle-of-the-road show with all the safe, matchups and, not entirely risky outcomes. That's usually what WrestleMania is. And then the period after WrestleMania, between WrestleMania and, the build up to SummerSlam is sometimes a really fertile, place for storytelling. You know, it's where we got, a few years ago, the Shield versus Evolution feud. And then the Seth Rollins turn last year, we got Kevin Owens, coming into the company. So back in the day after Stone Cold turned heel, we had this really interesting period of time when he and Triple H were feuding with Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho, who had not been at the top of the card yet. So it does seem like it's kind of the testing ground for WWE, and often it generates some really interesting stuff. This year is no different. I really think that the direction they're going with the Roman Reigns character, if they can limit his time on the microphone, I think they're using a lot of his natural charisma to make him a in-between kind of guy, not a superhero as much. I think the way they've installed AJ Styles and also introduced Gallows and Anderson is really interesting, and really it feels like a fresh main event scene. And then that's, you know, when you consider that it's been dominated by the Roman Reigns authority storyline, and before that, as great as Seth Rollins is, it was still marred by the authority and their acceptance of Seth Rollins. For once, we have a storyline that's about just the WWE Championship and has nothing to do with what Stephanie McMahon thinks about everybody or Triple H, or, you know, and it's the champion feels like he's the best guy on the card. He doesn't feel like he has anybody to answer to. And, hey, he's got a challenger that wants to see if he can measure up. And I think that's fantastic. And it's bizarre that they don't do it more often.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there in terms of the appeal of the main event and putting such an emphasis on the WWE Heavyweight Championship. I don't think anybody expected AJ Styles to be at the top of the card this quickly. And, you know, perhaps he is benefiting from the just laundry list of injuries that WWE has had. And, you know, we've seen guys like Dean Ambrose take advantage of that and put on great shows, especially at these tweener pay-per-views like Payback and Hell in a Cell and others in the past and on the annual card for WWE. And I fully expect him to put on a great match, and I hope he takes advantage of the opportunity. This is something that fans obviously wanted. They wanted him to arrive on its own. I mean, he's in WWE, so that was always a victory unto itself. But now he's in the main event, and it happened pretty quickly, but I think he did his part to earn it, and certainly he's a fan favorite, and he's done a great job in the ring so far, and I think he's a guy throughout his career who has earned this main event status, and he is capable of putting on the best possible show in ring, and he's a guy who can maybe make Roman Reigns look good in the ring. And touching on what you said just a minute ago, I think you're also dead on about just the way that this has built up and the actual storyline that coincides with this match, with the Anderson Gallows thing and their relationship with AJ Styles. And obviously they're not using Bullet Club by name. That has yet to be determined if they're going to do that. I doubt that they will, but just the way that they debuted their interactions with Styles, and Styles, like Roman Reigns, he's not the best on the mic either. But I think that he's done some really, really, really good nonverbal storytelling, especially with his interactions and his reactions with what Anderson and Gallows are doing to Roman Reigns, whether they're interrupting a match, whether they're beating him up behind the scenes. And just to see the reaction and the look on AJ Styles' face, it's just really solid communication and storytelling. And it's very simple, but it's good to see them sort of get back to the sort of roots of pro wrestling storytelling and keeping the authority angle out of it, like you said. Now, there will be that sort of McMahon storyline, the sibling rivalry between Shane and Stephanie, and Vince will make an appearance on Sunday, and they'll sort of hash out who's going to run Monday Night Raw moving forward. But that seems to be where it belongs, sort of as – and we'll see how it plays out on Sunday. Maybe that becomes the main event. But it's like that should be in the background. And it seems like, you know, for a change here, they're putting an emphasis on these grudge matches, these rivalries, and they're just building a really solid card and letting these terrific performers put on a show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you've got the Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn match that everybody's been dying to see. And, of course, there's a kind of a secret history, you know, of their feud that you could spend – hours and hours and hours watching on the internet between Ring of Honor and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and all these other places that they've clashed in the past. And then you've got the Dean Ambrose, Chris Jericho feud, which I think I'm I think I'm over Dean Ambrose. I really just based on his comedic spots here recently, the way he's dealt with the Brock Lesnar fallout, or at least the way they've written him to, I've lost almost all interest in him. But Chris Jericho does such a great job just by dropping phrases like stupid idiot emotions that it makes me invested. And like you said, it's just the basics of good wrestling storytelling. I think the Natalya Charlotte feud is clearly that's a placeholder feud. You know, it's a way to span time, but it's also pretty well put together, and they're getting the most out of it that they can. And those two performers could put on a really great match, and hopefully they get time to do that. So, I think I agree with you. I think that it's almost like WrestleMania, the buildup is so exhausting to Vince McMahon or whoever is involved, that it was so exhausting that for a month they were just like, whatever, let's just like let, you know, whatever B team write. Let's let the SmackDown crew run Raw and SmackDown for a while because we're so tired and we've got to, you know, refuel a little bit. And I have a feeling that after Payback, that'll all change once everybody starts paying attention to the show again. It does seem like a change of pace from what was going on before WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about Dean Ambrose, because I'm a Dean Ambrose fan. I know that you like a lot of what he has done, but I'm kind of with you right now. I'm losing patience as a fan just to see where they're going to take Dean Ambrose. What will he do next? And I know that I certainly didn't think or hope that it would be let him do an in-ring, you know, comedy show like the Ambrose Asylum, you know, in the vein of Piper's Pit or these other he just is not the guy to do that. And so much of his humor, he's capable of being funny at times.
Yeah.
You had mentioned the whole the Ice Bucket Challenge moment that happened backstage, and that was a funny moment, but I mean he's not really a funny guy, and he's meant to be tough and intimidating and crazy, and I think they've just kind of dropped the ball on the character, and it's a shame because, you know, he obviously has so much potential. He has a connection with the crowd, and I just don't think that this is the best way to use him.
No, it's embarrassing, really. I mean, if you look at the Shield and the appeal of the Shield, I think they've done a pretty decent job. Well, they haven't done a great job, but there's elements that they've done a good job with in taking the unique elements of the Shield and then implementing those into those guys' individual characters after the split. You know, Roman Reigns theoretically still works well when he's the, you know, silent bulldog that just kind of goes out there and beats everybody up. And Seth Rollins is still – he retains his intelligence and his trickiness and the whole architect thing that they always talked about when he was in the Shield. And Dean Ambrose was the unhinged one that you really didn't know what way he was going to go, what he was going to do. And at his best, he still has that, but they rarely let him show that. I mean, I'm not sure what wrestling podcast refers to him this way, but I think the best way to describe him is a prop comic at this point. And and I think that that's kind of where he's at. He's in that upper mid-card comedy spot. He's in the post-championship Mick Foley spot. You know, it's like he went straight from Mankind in 1996 to Mick Foley in 2000 without that whole part where he was a legitimate contender to the main championship. And at this point, I feel like they've run out of gas with him, and they've taken me from a guy who thinks that, yeah, clearly he is somebody that they should build up to be a top star and eventually give a big, you know, euphoric title win to at WrestleMania. They've taken him from that in my mind to somebody that, you know what, maybe he's IC title and that's where he's at for the rest of his career. And that's a crying shame, I think.
We know that that's not true though, just based on what he's done in main events and the buildup he's been a part of while you know some of those wrestlers have been out, and again the energy that he creates with fans, I mean there is something there, and it just seems strange that WWE would ignore that and they just let that go. It seems like there's money there, you know, to use a term like that and to be cynical about it, And I just don't understand how he just doesn't remain at the top with Roman Reigns and Rollins once he comes back and some of these other guys, because he's a good performer. He's good on the mic. He has the look. He has the appeal. He seems to have sort of the total package, but I don't know. I just feel like the writing, and I feel like the company is sort of stunting that growth. And like you said, maybe they're happy with the ceiling that they have created for him. You know, lucky for him, he's going to be performing with another really good asset with WWE and Chris Jericho, who I think is doing his best work in years right now. He has really embraced the bad guy role again that put him, you know, on top for me as somebody who had, again, the total package back in his, you know, late 90s WCW days when he was just terrific as this spoiled brat, just this entitled idiot who, you know, whose antics just always brought a lot of fun to the table on a weekly basis on Nitro and Thunder and all those great, during those good WCW years. He was a big reason why that company was so appealing, not necessarily all the other big stars that left WWE. And he made a great name for himself and obviously had a good career in WWE. But I just think he's sort of found that same thing, that aspect within himself that made him so fun early in his career. And I've just really been enjoying him so far. So Dean Ambrose at least has the advantage of working with Jericho, who seems to be in great form both in and out of the ring. But, you know, what's weird is, you know, these wrestlers are used to sort of help each other out, prop each other up. And Jericho is just at a point in his career where it seems like he, you know, would be doing other wrestlers favors, right? Like AJ Styles, when he comes in, you have a rivalry, you make AJ Styles look good. Jericho won the WrestleMania match. Kind of strange choice, right? And now you have this rivalry with Dean Ambrose. And Dean Ambrose is certainly established, but not to the extent that Chris Jericho is. And now you have Jericho making Dean Ambrose look pretty bad in this rivalry so far, especially on Raw this past week where he just beat him up after Dean Ambrose sort of went on the offensive and Jericho turned on a dime. And, you know, he had the advantage, and it once again made Dean Ambrose look bad. I just think it's strange where it's like, no, actually, with these rivalries, we're going to make this veteran like Chris Jericho look good instead of pushing the new guys. So do you consider that kind of a strange choice?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's definitely a logical way to tell the story where, you know, Jericho gets the upper hand right before the pay-per-view, and then
that's
Ambrose kind of gets his heat back. But
I think
the weird question
is the Styles. The
Absolutely.
Styles, though, that to me suggests that it could happen again here. And I just don't understand, like, you bring a new commodity like Styles into the mix. I mean, what's the point of that loss? And what would be the point of another Dean Ambrose loss at a pay-per-view?
Right, exactly. And you know, how does that not make Jericho look kind of good that he's, you know, he just beat the guy that's the number one contender. So he should be respected. You know, he should be at the top of the card, but you know, he's in this weird TV show feud with this guy that lost terribly at WrestleMania. It's the kind of logic that well, it's not logic. It's bad storytelling, honestly. And yeah, I don't know. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's no good to use Jericho as just a guy that keeps losing over and over and over again. But at the same time, you got to pick when you make him look good and when you don't.
Just going down this list here, some that we haven't mentioned. There's an Intercontinental title match between The Miz, who is inexplicably the Intercontinental champion right now, but who, like Jericho, is having fun in the bad guy role again. He reintroduces his wife to the mix, and they've had really good chemistry, and she's been a lot of fun. You know, in a way, even though Lana is back with Rusev right now, she's sort of playing the Lana role, and she's getting a great reaction from fans, and I think people are just excited to see Cesaro in the ring in a match that, you know, may or may not matter depending on how much stock you put in the Intercontinental Championship. You've got a grudge match between Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin, which, you know, may not mean much when it all comes down to it, but it should make for a fun match. You know, these guys are totally capable, and it's just another, you know, another fun match to watch in sort of that old school way where it might feel superfluous, but I think it's good when you just give talented in-ring performers something to do at pay-per-views like this. You've got the tag team match, this finals in this
makeshift tag team tournament that they created to create a number one contender to face the New Day at some point. Between here, recent NXT call-ups in Enzo and Cass versus the Vaudevillains, and considering the tag team matches that we've seen in NXT in the past few years, I expect a great match from these guys. These guys who are great in-ring workers and great storytellers in the ring. You know, I just hate to see that get diluted. I know that you've had kind of a problem with how all of this has sort of come to be, in that they've made the weird decision to call up these NXT guys and give them sort of a fast pass to the finals of this sort of strange tournament. What problem have you had with it?
Well, look, I love tournaments. I love fake tournaments. It's a lot of fun, and I think it's a great way, especially in a division. It's a great way to showcase like what's going on and who's there and what they're doing. But I feel like in this case, there's two things. The first is they haven't even told us who the Vaudevillains are, and there's no reason to care about these guys. There's no story behind them. There's no lead up to them. They're just another NXT act that gets dumped on the main roster with zero context. So I think that's damaging to them. But I think it's also damaging to the entire division that you have in kayfabe terms. You have these two rookie teams that have apparently gone over the entire established tag team division to get to the finals of this tournament. And it just seems like that makes your entire roster look pretty bad, you know? Like if they had a number one contendership tournament for the World Heavyweight Championship and the finals were Baron Corbin versus Apollo Crews, people would think that's kind of weird. But because the tag team titles are so, that tag team division has been brutalized so horribly, just like most other championships, that it just doesn't mean anything. I guess it's just another way to showcase new tag teams, but you're not really showcasing them because you're not telling us who they are. I mean, they've done a good job with Enzo and Cass because those two guys are easy to give context to. You give Enzo a mic. That's it, you know? But the Vaudevillains need a little bit more. I mean, it's a high-concept act, and I think that they've proven that the main roster, whether it's the writers or producers or whoever, they don't know how to deal with these high-concept NXT acts. You know, Bo Dallas and Tyler Breeze and The Ascension and even Neville to a certain degree. It's just they take them at face value and then they kind of shrug and then put them on the schedule. And they're doing it again with the Vaudevillains, and it doesn't make any sense. And it's, I don't know, it's, again, it comes back down to bad storytelling. But at least, like you said, at least it's an old-fashioned way to build interest in a match, in that it's a tournament, you know, and it has had a logical story through the last month or so. So I am happy with that, and I'm very happy to see Enzo and Cass on a pay-per-view, but at the same time, they're scooping water out of a boat that still has holes in the bottom of it.
Yeah, the tag team division needed a shot in the arm for sure. Outside of the New Day, there's just not really a tag team that seems to really matter. I mean, you can point to the League of Nations, but it seems like they kind of hit their ceiling at WrestleMania 32, and they got a big win over New Day, but then. Then they got beat up, and now they're just sort of like there to support their brothers in these individual matches. So I'm not really sure where they're going to go with that. It's kind of weird that they're not a part of this whole thing. And yeah, I agree with you that the Vaudevillains, you know, there hasn't been a lot of build up in terms of fleshing them out as characters. I mean, at least they're giving them something to do that has actual stakes in. Unlike Apollo Crews, we have yet to see, you know, what's going to happen with Apollo Crews, but unlike Tyler Breeze and Bo Dallas and The Ascension, like you mentioned, at least these guys are, you know, quote unquote, fighting for the tag team titles, right? So they could matter here in an instant and have a much bigger role. I'll be shocked if they do that. And honestly, as somebody, you know, if I don't pay a lot of attention to NXT and I don't know much about the Vaudevillains, and the fact that they were big-time performers there and they were champions as a tag team there, then I'm probably scratching my head and wondering, like, who are these guys and why are they in the finals now? Like, what about them makes them contenders? What makes them formidable? What you know, why do they deserve to be here over these, you know, previously established tag teams like
the Usos and like the Dudley Boys and these other guys who exist. I understand they're giving them a push, but like you said, who are they? I mean, they've got an interesting entrance and you know, these guys are seemingly good performers, but it seems like they just showed up. They're doing it. They're in the finals and we'll all just accept that.
Yeah. And that's how so much of the storytelling goes. And you mentioned that the tag team division has needed a shot in the arm. If you can call it Intercontinental or United States divisions, also need a shot in the arm, but I don't think they need a shot in the arm from new performers. I think they just need storytelling. They just need some stakes. They need, hey, this happened, then that happened, and then these guys didn't like that, and you know, cross some wires and I don't know, just call up Paul Heyman and ask him, how do you write pro wrestling storylines? Because it's I don't think it's all that difficult. But, yeah, it's the same thing you could say about the Intercontinental scene, which they've got a decent story now going between Miz and Cesaro. I don't know exactly what it is, but it seems like there's at least three storyline beats in the last month that have been about a man interrupting another man's fake talk show. And so maybe that's a device they need to stop leaning on so heavily. But look, if the storytelling between Miz and Cesaro was like Dusty versus Ric Flair in the 80s, even if it was that level, that title would still be suffering because of what they did to Zack Ryder and the fact that he, who won the championship on such a big scale and such a big moment, it hasn't been seen from. Like he should be a major part of this story. He should be on the fringes at least. You know, I'm not saying he needs to be the one that's the champion, but you need to be following up with that guy and saying, hey, how did your dad feel about this? You know, what happened to that hat? And just follow through on basic storytelling. If you watched a movie where in the first, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe this is a device, but if you watched a movie where in the first 5 minutes of it, James Bond got killed and James Bond's sidekick stepped up and became James Bond, and then in the first act got killed by the bad guy, and then another bad guy, like another good guy, came in to take over, you wouldn't understand what was going on. But that's what's happening here, is you had this plucky hero overcome the odds and then get beat unceremoniously and disappear. And that doesn't make any sense. And it's frustrating, and it makes the title look like garbage, because it was just, apparently that match was a garbage match because some garbage guy could win it. And it's just damaging all the way down the line.
Yeah, and then the U.S. title is just sort of wandering in oblivion right now.
The pre-show championship. I want it to be renamed. I want a women's championship ceremony, style ceremony, to rename that thing the pre-show championship and have it, like, presented by Val Venus or something like that.
Oh, my God. That would be a dream come true. But
I know.
No, you like, the value that they really made such a strong effort to put in the U.S. title over the last year with John Cena's U.S. Open Challenge and obviously Kevin Owens, like that became a belt that mattered. That became, you know, a championship that people cared about in the storyline that involved major players, and it has just dissipated and just like disintegrated into the air, and nobody cares about it. And the IC title is the exact same way. It's like they had to rinse and repeat what they did with the ladder match from the year before. And obviously last year they let somebody like Daniel Bryan win to give the belt a little more importance. This year they didn't do the same thing. But, you know, I've said this before, I think that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens' feud should be over the internet. I mean, it's probably good that it has the built-in thing of, like, so much history that they have, and it's a grudge match, but I just think it should be for the Intercontinental belt. And
I agree,
And now you've got a guy like The Miz, who I like. You know, I think he's a fun performer, and he's obviously put in a lot of work, and you know, maybe they're rewarding that, you know, for how consistent he's been over the past couple of years doing what he does, and I think that most people think he has his own ceiling in terms of what he can offer in and out of the ring, but I don't know. It's just a strange choice, like you said. I mean, it again, it devalues it. And this, you know, for so many years was considered the second most important belt, perhaps the second most important storyline, and it's just been kind of reduced. But, you know, Cesaro is a big-time fan favorite. He's obviously one of the company's best in-ring workers.
maybe giving him the belt and giving him something more to do will prop it up. I doubt it, to be quite honest with you, and I think it is sort of in – it's on the cusp of being in similar territory to the pre-show title.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really getting into predictions, but, I do think that that is probably what they're trying to get at. It is they tried to build the Miz up as a strong bad guy and then bring in Cesaro as the conquering good guy and then hopefully let him have a little run with that championship because it has often been like the good wrestler championship, you know, when Randy Savage and Shawn Michaels and Tito Santana were the guys to hold it while they were kind of bigger, slower guys with the heavyweight championship. So Cesaro definitely checks that box. He's great, and I'm so happy that he's back. I'm happy that he's in a high-profile feud. So I'm thinking that that's the direction they're going to go, but logic does not always prevail. So who really knows?
All right, well, real quick before we go, which match on this card, which you know we've sort of built up and torn down here at the same time, which match on this card are you most looking forward to?
So could you list it out for me?
Okay, I don't have a list in front of me, but I'm going to do my best here. So you've got the heavyweight championship match, Roman Reigns versus AJ Styles. You've got the IC title match, Cesaro versus The Miz. You've got Ambrose versus Jericho. You've got Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, which is probably the answer. You've got the tag team match between the Vaudevillains and Enzo and Cass. You've got Baron Corbin versus Dolph Ziggler. You've got the women's championship between Charlotte and Natalya. I think I'm running out of steam here.
Yeah, no, I think that's everything. I mean, disregarding all of the context leading up to it, that is a pretty fantastic card. I can't think of a bad name on that list except for Baron Corbin, and he's not terrible. Yeah, I mean, I think I know exactly what's going to happen in the heavyweight championship match, but I think it's going to be a really entertaining match. So that wouldn't be a bad answer. But you, like you said, I think that Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, I've never seen any of their other matches. I've seen a few spots from them here and there, and then they all look insane and quite frightening. But I don't think they're going to go to the levels that they've gone to in the past. But I think that these guys are great. They know what they're doing. They've probably been dreaming about being on this stage for a long time together, and I think that they're going to put on something really special. And I don't really know what's going to happen there. You know, I think that that's a story that it's probably going to continue for a very long time, maybe forever, and we'll see. I think it's a big deal for each guy because, honestly, I think Sami Zayn, he has, since debuting on the main roster, I think maybe he only has, like, one singles win or something like that. So this could be a big deal for him, or it could continue to prop up Kevin Owens as a guy that really should be in the World Heavyweight Championship conversation.
Good call. I'm with you. You know, I think Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn is obviously the one that is probably going to give us the best story in the ring, and they've done a really terrific job. Kevin Owens, to me, has been sort of a mini MVP for a calendar year now for WWE,
yep.
And I look forward to really everything that he does. And he's good on the mic, he's good in the ring, he's incredible on the commentating table, and he has a future in that, but I hope that's a long way away. He's just so funny, and he's so good, and he obviously gets the business and is clearly a student of the game and knows how to deliver these stories. I'll be quite honest with you, Sami Zayn hasn't quite sold me just yet. His match at NXT TakeOver with Nakamura was incredible. I mean, there's no doubt that the guy is an incredible performer and has a lot of ability. I just am not sold on him as this clear-cut good guy that I should root for. And, you know, I should clearly familiarize myself with his history, not only as an individual performer, but obviously what he's done with Kevin Owens. But just in terms of judging what he's done since his call up with WWE, I haven't been I'm just not in quite yet. That has been the case with people in the past that where they haven't, it hadn't worked for me, you know, during the start and they've totally won me over. I fully expect him to do that because of just how many people love him. And I know that Kevin Owens is going to be a great place for him to start. And it's going to be a great launch pad for him when it comes to, you know, his immediate future in WWE. So that's definitely my go-to. And
I want to see AJ Styles make Roman Reigns look good in the ring. I think he's capable of doing it. I just think they still face an uphill battle in getting people to cheer for Roman Reigns. Pitting him against a fan favorite like AJ Styles is just a really strange choice. But again, the build up to that match and what they've done sort of in the wings with Anderson and Gallows, it's, I think, kind of a brilliant touch. And it's just, again, good old school wrestling storytelling that I feel like they've sort of, they should have called back to a little more in recent memory. And I think it's slowly but surely making Roman look a little better.
So do you just think that Sami Zayn is just comes off as a little generic? Oh, that was a joke. His
El Generico joke. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Got it. Ooh, okay.
I'm a nerd. I'm with it. I'm hip.
No, you're not. That's quite the contrary. Well, I mean, I'm going back to AJ Roman. I agree that it's going to be a high energy match, and I think that that's another one that I know that Roman is going to win that, but I don't know where the story is going to go. And I think that we may be seeing a full on heel turn finally with Gallows and Anderson ending up siding with Roman. Maybe I'm hoping that happens, but I think they have to pick a side at one point. And I think that they've got such a clear cut. They're never going to be able to get people to cheer Roman over AJ Styles, or really anybody else on the roster. So, you know, why would they try to force a heel turn for AJ?
Well, that's exactly
what they're going to do.
That seems ill-timed to do with AJ Styles. I don't know.
Sure.
I think the real prop bet here is which minute mark will it be when the Wyatts interfere during the main event?
Oh, I hadn't even considered that.
Because where are the Wyatts? I know Bray got hurt again, but we didn't hear the extent of his injury. But Strowman and Rowan and Clear, you know, and obviously Luke Harper have been out of commission for the past few weeks. And I guess if Bray's hurt, then that gives them nothing to do. So I don't know.
Well, they have so much to do when they're usually on TV. I mean, usually it's just on fire.
So no, I think that's probably going to happen. So
maybe Seth Rollins comes back in the main event and Gallows and Anderson are his new goons, and he feuds with both AJ and Roman.
Man.
Just think about an AJ Rollins match.
Just stop it.
Think about it.
I had my hopes up for a Rollins comeback for WrestleMania. I don't want to do that for, you know, payback. That would just be too sad. And do you miss J&J Security?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that was such a fantastic and organically developed little bit that they figured out. It was great.
Yeah, miss those guys.
I wish they hadn't named Gallows and Anderson. I wish they had just been like, is that maybe members of the Bullet Club, or are they AJ's old friends? And just like pretend like they don't know who those guys are. And then Rollins comes back, recruits them, and says that they're actually Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury, and that he like engineered them or like gave them some sort of like potion.
Yeah, he gave them like the same thing Shredder gave,
right?
Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Mutagen. He gave them mutagen, and that's the new J&J Security.
I think that's, now that you say that, it's probably what's going to happen on Sunday. So
that's actually probably a Lucha Underground storyline, to be fair.
All right, man. I think that's it. Ben Stark up in Huntsville. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on.
Rammer Slammer is produced and edited by Ben Flanagan for the Alabama Media Group and AL.com. Find us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Rammer Slammer. Thanks for listening.
And what do you know? We got a couple haters.